Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode 6, Star Wars, A New Hope. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Remaker's Mark. This is Episode 6, Part 1, where we are discussing Star Wars, A New Hope. With me, as always, is my friend and colleague, Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you today, and what are you drinking?
Fantastic, and blue milk.
Mmm, blue milk. Is that a white Russian with blue food coloring?
No, it is foreshadowing.
Oh, wow. Is that a like an organic brand out of Michigan that I'm not aware of?
It's, and you have to whisper it when you say it. It's like, oh, can you go to the grocery store and pick up some foreshadowing?
I like that. They sound like real jerks, but I'm going to let it fly.
It's very Dutch. Cool.
it's a Dutch thing.
Very Dutch. Also with me today is Jeremy Nielsen. Jeremy, how are you and what are you drinking?
I am lovely, and I am drinking whiskey and Bantha Poodoo.
Ooh, wow. Is that on the rocks or neat?
No, it's a mess is what it is.
It's rocky, all right.
I don't know if you could ever call that neat. Yikes. Lee Halfspent, how are you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing just fine, and I'm drinking whatever Luke was drinking at the cantina.
Ooh, wow.
So I don't even know.
Lemonade.
I don't even know what that is either. We'll have to look up some Wikipedia to figure that out. Mark Josing, how are you this fine day, and what are you drinking?
Hot oil bath and hot oil bath.
Ooh, wow. That'll clean you out real quick.
Well played.
Yikes. Yikes. That sounds sassy.
These pipes are clean!
Well, my name is Kyle Delahunt, and I will be your host today for episode 6 of Remaker's Mark. And I'm drinking a left-hand Polestar Pilsner, and rather enjoying it. It's good so far. Before we get started in our discussion, I wanted to say a quick thanks to our friends at Tipsy Pixels, as always. Tipsy Pixels is a monthly retro video game contest held at the Triple Rock Social Club in Minneapolis, hosted by Nell's Lens of Huge Theater. It features drink specials from Tallgrass Brewing, and players can win retro games and systems from Level Up Games, as well as free show tickets and free drinks from the Triple Rock Social Club. To find out more about Tipsy Pixels, you can find them on their website at tipsypixels.com and on Twitter at twitter.com/tipsypixels. Also want to just give a quick reminder that all of the Math is Hard properties are available on iTunes. So if you want to subscribe to them, you can do so there, or you can find information about them and subscription information at mathishard.net. So definitely go there and subscribe so you can get these sent to your lovely ears every 2 weeks or so. And let us know how we're doing. Hit up the contact link either on iTunes or the feedback link on iTunes or on mathishard.net. So, moving on to A New Hope. Well, for the zero of you that have not seen Star Wars A New Hope, we'll provide a quick summary here. Star Wars A New Hope. Set a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, Star Wars Episode 4, later titled A New Hope, follows a group of freedom fighters known as the Rebel Alliance as they plot to destroy the powerful Death Star space station, a devastating weapon created by the evil Galactic Empire. This conflict disrupts the isolated life of farm boy Luke Skywalker when he inadvertently acquires the droids carrying the stolen plans to the Death Star. After the Empire begins a cruel and destructive search for the droids, Skywalker and Jedi Knight Obi-Wan Kenobi join Han Solo and co-pilot Chewbacca on a daring mission to rescue the owner of the droids, Rebel leader Princess Leia, and save the galaxy. Sounds kind of plain and just sort of everyday science fiction-y when you read it that way, but it is anything but. Star Wars A New Hope. So this is Episode 4. So this was the first one released, and yet it's Episode 4, which was always confusing, but we'll not get into that. That's just semantics. This was made in 1977 and has been re-released several times since then, originally directed by George Lucas. We certainly have a lot of history with this, so we won't go too in-depth here, but I think a few of us would like to just chip in a little bit. So, Jer, what's your history with Star Wars?
Well, my history with this particular movie goes way back to my childhood. I was just a tiny wee little babe and took my first big trip into the city, and Star Wars was the movie that my aunt took me to, thus solidifying two things. Number one, I love Star Wars. And number two, that was the coolest aunt that I will have ever had, and she became my favorite aunt after that.
Wow, no kidding. Deservedly so. And Lee, how about you? What's your Star Wars A New Hope history?
Oddly enough, it was not the movie at first. My mom had just sort of out of the blue purchased an abridged version of this on cassette with a read-along book, and it was maybe a two-hour movie that was condensed down into 45 minutes with a narrator and sound bites from the movie, so that's how I got to know it.
I actually had the same book.
Did you?
Oh, my audio
I think
copy
I did
was
as
on,
well.
My audio was on vinyl, but...
Oh, I wish I still had it somewhere, but yeah, I didn't see the movie until many years later when it was re-released.
Great. And as far as I go, I actually don't remember the first time that I saw Star Wars, which I'm a little ashamed of, but I'm okay considering I think I was probably pretty young. But I do remember distinctly well when it was re-released. I believe it was 1990, either 96 or 97. I think probably 97, which would have been the 20th anniversary.
It was 97.
Yep. So they re-released it in the theater. And I was really excited about that. And my girlfriend at the time and I went and we bought tickets ahead of time. And we went and grabbed dinner and that ran later than we thought. And so by the time we got to the theater, it was just starting and it was just packed in there. I mean, it was just absolutely packed. The only two seats that we could find were in the front row, which, you know, not ideal, but okay, that's fine. I happened to be sitting next to probably a maybe 9-10-year-old kid there with a friend. He seemed really excited and, you know, he was really into it. And we were, you know, watching the movie very intently and certainly into it as we should be. And at the scene where Luke puts on his whiny voice and says he wants to go to Tashi Station to get the power converters, this kid nudges me in the side. And I kind of leaned over and he said, why is that funny? I was like, oh, it's because Luke's really whiny. He goes, oh, and then he kind of nudges, he nudges his buddy and then he tells him and then he could see the kid like, oh, okay, okay. And like throughout the movie, like not enough to annoy me, but like three or four other times he nudged me and asked me questions. And luckily it wasn't like, what is the Galactic Empire? Cause I'd be like, you know, like, but it was, you know, basic enough stuff that I could. So I sort of felt like I was just like gently easing the next generation into Star Wars, well, which made me super happy. Yeah. I was very happy.
Yeah. The next generation made the right choice.
That's beautiful.
That's very cool.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Thank you. And then finally, Andy, do you want to talk a little bit about our group's history with Star Wars?
I do. We have a history of getting together from time to time, though it's been a long time, of getting together and playing Star Wars Trivial Pursuit. These games get cutthroat, and I do mean cutthroat. We have a trophy that our beloved Lee Hogwarts has made, and I believe, Kyle, you are the current holder of the trophy. Is this correct?
Yeah, that is correct, yes.
Not for much longer. the five of us are just unabashedly and unreservedly Star Wars geeks of the highest order.
Indeed. Yes. So we are not only qualified, but I would say giddily excited to talk about this. When I came up with the idea for this, it essentially was basically like wanting to do exactly this. So, you know, this was the first movie or series of movies that came to mind when talking about the premise of Remaker's Mark. So yeah, needless to say, this has been not a long time coming, but we're all very excited about that. So yeah, that's Star Wars history. If you want to share your own Star Wars history with us, that would be great. We would love to share that in the next episode. So send that our way via the website mathishard.net. So in this first part of our episode, as usual, we're going to talk about recasting Star Wars, both in terms of major characters and minor characters. We've selected four major characters and five minor characters to recast here. So the first of those is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Lee, do you want to talk about good Obi-Wan?
Absolutely. This strange old hermit has quite the past. He is a former member of the Jedi Council, as well as a general who fought in the Clone Wars. He winds up saving Luke's life while sacrificing his own and opening the door to a much larger world.
What is it? It's your father's lightsaber. This is the weapon of a Jedi Knight. Not as clumsy or random as a blaster. An elegant weapon for a more civilized age. For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. Before the Dark Times. Before the Empire.
When I was going through this one, this is my last casting pick, by the way, because I have to say that you cannot recast Sir Alec Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitively Obi-Wan Kenobi. So, you know, I'd gone through a few actor choices that maybe seemed a little too obvious, and ended up going completely unorthodox with this one.
Nice.
It would change a lot with the saga itself. And I picked Emma Thompson.
Wow.
Switching it up.
I made Obi-Wan Kenobi a female.
Lady Jedi. Nice.
Yep. I think she has a lot of that presence that Alec Guinness had, and that's what I want. That's someone that's very in control, very confident, and yet a little mysterious.
Yeah.
That is bold, and I like it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's the kind of shakeup we need here on Remakers Mark.
Question.
Yes.
So how old would she be back when she served Princess Leia's father during the Clone Wars?
She would have been very young. She would have been about what Luke's age is now.
So the late teens, early 20s?
Yeah.
All right.
Like maybe just switching from Padawan to Jedi.
Well, right. Emma Thompson isn't young. I mean, she's not super old.
She's in her 50s.
Yeah.
So
how old was Alec when Star Wars was made?
Late 50s, I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, that's reasonable.
Yeah. And there's movie makeup, too, if you want to make her look a little older. That's but
true. Right.
Yeah.
Alec Guinness was in his early 60s, actually.
Okay.
Looking at the IMDb. He was born in 1914.
Got it. 63.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, he was up there then. But Jer, give us your pick.
Well, I would agree with you that Alec Guinness has shoes that are unfillable. But we probably will say that about pretty much all of these characters, I would imagine, in some form or fashion. But the one problem that I always had with the portrayal of Obi-Wan Kenobi in the first movie is, especially when you look at the history and where he comes from, and this whole idea of, you know, he was this person that was this great warrior or fighter or whatever, even though wars do not make one great. We all know that. Alec Guinness had a presence about him, and he really embodied what that sort of monastic Jedi type, like, mysticism had in it, and that I thought that was fantastic. But I never really bought him, even as a younger guy, being like this soldier in a big conflict. Now you bring Ewan McGregor into the prequels, and okay, now I buy it. Now he's like the most badass guy ever. But Alec Guinness really didn't. I couldn't see that in this one. So I wanted to find somebody that had that sort of mystical quality to them, but also you could kind of see him as, yeah, 15 years ago, I bet you were like a scary dude. So I went with Billy Connolly.
Good Scotsman, Billy Connolly.
The Scotsman, Billy Connolly. Oh, okay. For those that don't know, he was in a lot of different things, including Head of the Class. He was in Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events as the uncle. He was the dad in El Duce in Boondock Saints. Mm-hmm. And anything? What else was he in?
He was most recently Brave. Featured Memorable. In Brave, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was in Brave. That's right. So I feel like he brings that sort of presence of just this like learned, especially if you look at his IMDb picture right now. Yeah, he looks like a crazy monk in the desert. But I also could see him as a great warrior at the same time.
Yeah.
The hardest part I would have with that is just his comedic past. And it's not as though a comedian cannot do dramatic roles, but I would fear that thing where like Obi-Wan would say something, then he'd turn to the camera and be like, can you believe that they had to do that? You know, like you know, where all of a sudden it's like he's commentating on it. I don't know. Like, obviously that's very much where he once was, but that's just how I associate him in my mind. So it would have to overcome that. I think he could, and I think he is a good actor. I think he's, you know, very charismatic and very personable. I just would have that fear of that, whether it's founded or not. I don't know.
On a similar note, even though all of us were too young to really know it before Star Wars, Alec Guinness was he was a Shakespearean trained actor that did a lot of very serious drama, and for him to be in this type of role probably threw people that knew him from that history too.
He also did some comedy. He was in the original version of The Lady Killers.
Huh. Oh, really?
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, I didn't know that.
He played the same role that Tom Hanks played.
Huh.
Interesting.
I think Billy Connolly would have to do something with his voice, because I think what Dells was hitting on a little bit, like Billy Connolly's voice and his cadence and timbre is so distinctive that it would be – that I think that would – if that wasn't changed, that would take something away from the role. But I think – I agree with you, Jared, that I think he's a good enough actor that could be – dealt with to provide a little more gravitas to Obi-Wan instead of slapstick.
You'd have to mute the Scots a little bit. I mean, not a lot, because I think I like that, just in the similar way that Alec Guinness had that very high British accent and timbre to his voice. But I think that you mute it a little bit, and so it's a little less cartoony and more serious, more Braveheart, if you will. So That's my two cents, Billy Connolly. So we go to Mark.
Yeah, I was really, really on the same page as Jer, where I want Obi-Wan to be a little bit more soldier-like, as to come off as a little bit tougher, maybe even a little bit darker. So I went with Gabriel Byrne.
Nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
I think he's, in addition to just seeming like a badass, and Gabriel Byrne really has that subtlety and just this depth to his acting. And, well, I don't want to say that many people are on par with Sir Alec Guinness, but it's tough for a contemporary actor to impress me more than Gabriel Byrne has. It's a little bit strange for me to picture him in this role, but I think that look at his eyes. Any of those roles like End of Days or The Usual Suspects, any of those intense dark drama action thingies. I want to see a lightsaber in that scene.
Yeah.
I think he would, oh, sorry, go ahead, Dells.
Nope. Go ahead, Jerry. You go ahead.
I think that he would almost go too far on that side of being very intense and very warrior-like, and then lose a little bit of that sort of fatherly guide that character becomes for Luke.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that from Gabriel Byrne. I would want to see him soften up and be patient and understanding, come off as wise. I mean, he always comes off as wise, but maybe a little bit too much on the evil calculating side.
All good Jedi traits.
Yeah, and one thing that I appreciate is that it brings a little bit more physicality to the role. We'll get to it when we talk about the filmmaking changes that we would propose, but I think part of it is that the physicality of Obi-Wan could be bumped up a little bit. Doesn't mean that he has to be way younger, but I would like for him to be a better Jedi. Jeez, I'm just calling Obi-Wan be a better Jedi, best Jedi ever.
He's a better duelist.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yep. So I think, you know, he would definitely ramp that up.
Yeah, I think so. So that's my Obi-Wan is Gabriel Byrne. Andy, make magic.
I will, because I also wanted to go for someone who I thought could lend a little more military prowess to the role and still have those eyes. So I also chose Gabriel Byrne.
Nice.
What I was going with the inspiration, I was thinking along the similar lines with Mark, kind of looking to Usual Suspects and things like that. But what really did it for me, which is, this sounds a little bit corny, but was his role in The Man in the Iron Mask. He played D'Artagnan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In that movie, granted, this movie came out 15 years ago when he was a much younger man, but, he had to display a certain prowess with a sword. And but he also, more than that, it was his character in that movie. If you remember, if you've seen the movie, he kind of plays the musketeer who remains loyal, kind of remains loyal to the king despite the king's behavior, despite, you know, he's yeah. loyal to the king despite the king. And he's got this kind of higher morality, about him, but he also has this sense of, how am I trying to say this? So he sees that the king is evil and that he's loyal to, an immoral man. And there's that conflict within him. So there's a certain wisdom, I think, that he portrays in that role. And that was one of the big things that made me think, like, I think he could be this good. He's seen a lot of things. He's seen the good and the evil of the world, of the galaxy, and still has his own moral compass that he follows, and he's still devoted to his own causes. But he's not wide-eyed and naive, and he's not completely cynical yet. He still has, his duty as he perceives it. So that's why I thought Gabriel Byrne would fit well in that role.
I agree.
I thought you might.
Mark agrees.
as you describe it, it makes me think that he would be a great Jedi-esque character, but I think he might be a better Sith. You know, like
I think that's a tribute to Gabriel Byrne as an actor, because I agree. I feel like he could play both sides of that coin incredibly well. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he, you know, the way that the Sith have been portrayed in the movies thus far, apart from the Emperor and what's that bad guy's name? Darth Vader. That's the one. apart from and maybe Count Dooku a little bit, like they seem to be a little more ninja, badass warrior kind of people, as opposed to just being evil. And so I feel like he could play, don't get me wrong, I think he could play evil very well, but I feel like he could do justice to this role and put his own twist on it to make it so, you know, maybe a little darker version of Obi-Wan. Like he's seen the horrors of the galaxy. So he's not an untarnished character by any sense of the word. So there.
I think it's interesting that one of the more interesting kind of Jedi Sith creations since the movies was the character in The Force Unleashed. It was a couple of video games, but it's like a guy who has kind of that inkling of the dark side to him and sort of vacillates between the two. Like, he's super powerful, and that shows in the video games, which are pretty cool. But, you know, it's like it brings humanity to the Jedi on their own are not very human, and that is a purposeful thing. But I think the more human you can make them, the more people can relate to them. They're not going to be able to relate to them in terms of skill sets, but they can relate to them in terms of conflict and empathy and how to manage situations that are challenging that way. And I think he could do that really well.
Thank you.
I agree.
Who do you have, Kyle? Who do you have?
I wanted to basically get as close to Alec Guinness as I could today, without picking Ewan McGregor, since he did such a fine job in the prequels.
He is Alec Guinness.
Yeah, he did such a fantastic job. But I wanted to have that elder statesman, but I wanted someone that had just a little bit more prowess physically, as I've talked just a little bit about. But for that, I went with Bernard Hill, who we know from the Lord of the Rings movie. He played Theoden. He was Captain Joseph Smith in Titanic. So he's got that presence. You know, he's got the presence of a leader. He's got especially in the role of Theoden, he had that balance of stillness and fire at the same time. And I think Obi-Wan really needs. And I could see him playing both sides of that. I could see him playing both the playful teacher who has kind of a secret but doesn't give it up completely. I can see him playing the more zen-like aspects of the Jedi, and as is seen in the Lord of the Rings movie, especially Return of the King, he can wield a sword really well, or a lightsaber in this case, really well. So I went with Bernard Hill for that.
He could have like a lightsaber that's like really long and thick, like a broadsword. That'd be pretty cool. Like a
totally
8 foot long lightsaber.
Wow,
like a gravity hammer.
Where he accidentally kills everyone.
Or purposefully.
There was I can't remember, maybe did one of us send it in the pre-production for this, but it was a picture of Luke Skywalker like looking down the barrel of a lightsaber, like world's most powerful weapon, you know, and he's like looking down at like, hey, what's this thing?
Immediately points it at his head.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. Saga over.
Yep, indeed. Yes, indeed. Okay, so for Obi-Wan Kenobi, originally played by Sir Alec Guinness, Lee chose Emma Thompson, Jer chose Billy Connolly, Mark and Andy both chose Gabriel Byrne, and I chose Bernard Hill. Next up is Princess Leia. Jer, tell us about the princess.
Yes, thank you. Princess Leia is sort of the beginnings of our plot for the movie. She is first seen on a diplomatic vessel, but gets captured by Darth Vader and the insidious Grand Moff Tarkin, and is found out to be part of the Rebel Alliance. She's a plucky go-getter. She's very, very much assured of herself, very much not like a typical princess, especially nowadays, a typical Disney princess, of which she is now one. she's very self-assured. She's very, can be very brash. She's a leader, even though she in the movie is, or in the first movie, I think that her character is supposed to be somewhere around, late teens, I believe, somewhere in that age, around 20. So, kind of takes control sometimes, is quick to throw back lines when, especially once the plot gets going and it's just her and the guys, with Han Solo and Luke and they're sort of their little band. And she keeps up with them as far as the quips and the ideas and all of that. And so it's a great role. And I think that it could be even expanded upon, but, I really like how Carrie Fisher played it. And I like that they didn't make her just this one dimensional damsel in distress, but really brought her to the forefront many times. So,
you know, sometimes I amaze even myself.
That doesn't sound too hard. They let us go. It's the only explanation for the ease of our escape.
Easy? You call that easy?
They're tracking us.
Not this ship, sister.
At least the information in R2 is still intact.
What's so important? What's he carrying?
The technical readouts of that battle station. I only hope that when the data's analyzed, a weakness can be found.
That being said, and my choice may be affected by the recent Oscars, if anybody saw them, but I went with Jennifer Lawrence.
Nice.
She brings such charm, such likability and fun. But I also, in the movies that she's came out with, Hunger Games and some of the other ones, she brings a good intensity too, and can take charge and be that leader, and you believe it. And I think that she would keep up well with the other characters, and you'd believe her as a princess. You'd believe her as the leader of this rebellion. You'd believe her as this plucky love interest of whoever it's going to be. Not to, you know, spoil it for people that haven't seen it yet.
She is currently one of my favorites, I think. And she really, whatever role she's in, she just lets it all hang out there. Like, she doesn't hold anything back.
It is just,
which is,
it's so hard not to like her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's managed to stay a human in Hollywood, which is really hard to do. I don't know if you guys saw, there was a video that came out after the Oscars with her interview with the press corps, you know, where she's sitting up. Did you guys see that? Like, one of them asks, of course, because they're was like, well, what do you think you've peaked too early? What do you think about that? She's like, well, I didn't until now. Like, it's just so great.
Yeah.
Like, what an honest answer. And, you know, when they're naming the numbers of the people who were going to be interviewing her, she's like, am I on auction? What's going on here? Like, are you bidding for me? Just, it was so great. I think it's, I really like her. I don't know if I love her as Leia, but she is easily one of the best actresses working in terms of versatility, especially in this type of role. So I'm not completely convinced, but I really like it at the same time. And I would like to see what she would do with it.
Have you seen Winter's Bone?
Yes, I have. And that's what made me first think of her when I saw her at the Oscars and was thinking about who could play it. And I remember that's the first movie I saw her in. And she just is so solid in that, with just this kind of freaky intensity, but also at the same time, still likable. Still, you wanted to root for her and you wanted everything to be okay.
So she would be in X-Men movies, Hunger Games, and Star Wars. That's quite the genre monopoly there.
It's the girl Martin Freeman.
Funny.
So Kyle, who did you have that is Jennifer Lawrence-ish? I'm sorry, Princess Leia-ish.
Yeah,
you're not sorry.
Good try. Nice work, Captain Subliminal. So I, much of the same things that you discussed, Jer, in terms of the type of Leia that I wanted. You know, she needs to be young but wise, and she needs to be sweet but acerbic at the same time. The character really has to balance a lot, and I think that's very demanding of an actress. That would be very hard to do. The person that I came to, and this was a hard one for me, but I feel good about it, is Mila Kunis. She can boss people around. Essentially, her whole 70s show character was just basically bossing Ashton Kutcher around, which, again, doesn't sound like the most glamorous thing in the world, but she was a force to be reckoned with in that role. And she has shown herself to be a really excellent actress since then. I didn't like that character in the 70s show at all, but I thought she was really good in spite of that. And since then, she's done really great work, both comedic and dramatic. Her take in Black Swan, I thought, was really good. She did very, very well there in a very physically demanding role. So I was trying to, my ultimate caliber was the scene where Vader and Tarkin are presenting Alderaan to her, and they have that back and forth. And I was trying to picture various actresses doing that. And I could see her spitting back at Tarkin really well. You know, I see you have Vader on the leash, or, the lines on that. So she was the best one that I can think of to do that scene with the bite that it needs and the wisdom that it needs. So Mila Kunis was my choice.
I like that choice. I think I wasn't a real big fan of hers until I saw her in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, which, yeah. Yep.
It's a funny movie, but her role isn't there for the comedy aspect. She plays a more serious role in that movie, and she did a really wonderful job. So, ever since then, I've been a fan of hers, but I really like her for Leia.
I think the one that did it for me is Extract. It's a great movie, and she plays this thief and con woman who's just manipulating the hell out of everybody, and she's great at it.
Yep, that's a great reference too. I don't know if you guys listen to the podcast Bullseye at all. Jesse Thorne, who did Sound of Young America, which then turned into Bullseye with a slight format change. At the end of each Bullseye episode, he does what's called the Outshot, I think, which is basically him talking about something that he really likes. And he's just like a great media guy, a great talent guy. And his last Outshot was about Extract, about how much he loves that, and about how Mike Judge, as a comic writer, wrote this movie in like big swaths of comedy that has a lot of subtle emotion behind it too. Yeah, so I would definitely recommend checking that out. Mm-hmm. Andy, how about you? Who did you pick for Leia?
My pick's a little more abstract, I think, but I really like it because I think she balances those traits that you were describing, Kyle. I think she balances them really, really well. She's a little unorthodox, I think, for the role, but I would love to see how she plays it. I chose Lena Dunham, who you may or may not know, but she is the creator and star of the HBO series Girls. She is a brilliant writer. She's smart as a whip, and she's very, I know this is said about her a lot, but she's so young. I think she's 24, 25. I'm not really sure. I probably should have looked that up before I said anything. but I think she has the presence of a young, smart, confident, and occasionally brash woman. While I don't think she carries herself or portrays herself on screen with that kind of, regal aristocratic demeanor that Princess Leia, we kind of expect with her, but I think she could go there, and I think it would be an interesting take on it, and I would love to see her try that.
That's right on. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I think that she has chosen not to write roles, especially for herself, but in general, that are not Princess Leia, But I don't think that means that she can't perform them. I think she just chooses to write very differently from that. But she is incredibly talented.
She kicks ours. And really, isn't that what Princess Leia is all about?
She's good with the blaster.
You're spot on.
And it looks like she is 26 after I fumbled yep. through all that. So that was my pick. Mark, what you got?
Following up on this trend of trying to get a young actress that that can really do anything, I went with a younger one than you did, Andy.
All right.
And I picked Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, wow.
I'm a huge fan of hers, and I'm just amazed at the type of poise and versatility that she's shown. At the tender age of 16, I believe, but I mean, her resume already includes, you know, Kick-Ass, 500 Days of Summer, Hugo, Dark Shadows. I haven't seen Let Me In, but I saw the original.
She's really good in it.
Mm.
Yep.
But yeah, very, very impressed with her. I mean, she can be Kick-Ass. You know, she's shown some great comedy, some really great, just subtle and, well, graceful acting in Hugo. And she's really all over the board and forceful in everything that she does. Huge fan of hers, and I think I think she would be an excellent Leia.
Yeah, I'm hugely in favor of that. I couldn't agree more with everything you said about that. That is awesome. That's my favorite pick of yours yet, Mark. Well done.
Thank you.
And it also goes back to what I was saying originally, that her character as it was written is this sort of child princess leading this rebellion. So
yes.
I like that she's younger. I think it fits the character more. It gets a little weird with the love story later, but I think it makes sense and makes that character all the more powerful or interesting.
Yeah, I think it did skew my cast a little bit younger, but yeah, I don't think that that she really reads as a 16-year-old, and because she does have that type of poise and maturity. Yeah, and then there's always, you know, Hollywood makeup.
Yeah, I had no idea she was 16. That's crazy.
I actually didn't either, but thank you to IMDb. So Lee, let's hear it.
Well, my pick was I wanted to focus on the strength of the character. I think that's what sticks out for me most about Princess Leia is she's sort of brave and wise beyond her years. She's already very well established in the rebellion and in the Senate, and at such a young age, kind of like her mom. So I picked Rooney Mara.
Oh, nice.
Almost exclusively on her portrayal of Lisbeth Salander in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Thinking about the strength, I would want her to be a little bit more accessible, of course, and maybe a little bit more funny. But I think she would do a really excellent job at this.
Yeah. And she was very normal, very human in The Social Network.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Plus, I do want to see her hair done up in the buns.
I totally forgot that was her. I mean, I guess I didn't forget, but it just seems like such a world away from everything she's done since then that she was in The Social Network. That, you know, just the scene at the beginning is so great.
She's such a chameleon in her look.
Yeah,
definitely.
She's kind of gone goth since Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, but I largely think it's that's the decision. I'm sure it's like she and her agent made, you know, it's like, we've got enough sweet people and let's ratchet up the kind of gothy, metally, whatever, you know, like, so I hope she doesn't shoehorn herself or doesn't like pigeonhole herself that way. But yeah, I don't know. I she's good at it. I just think she can do a lot more. And I think this would be a great start. Definitely.
Yep. And I think she's, she's slated to play the follow-ups to that. So I don't know, maybe she's just trying to hang on to the character a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. You don't want her to do Care Bears and do Elizabeth. Although, I don't know, maybe we'll see. All right. So for Princess Leia, originally played by Carrie Fisher in all her coked up glory, Jer chose Jennifer Lawrence. I chose Mila Kunis. Andy chose Lena Dunham. Mark chose Chloe Grace Moretz, and Lee chose Rooney Mara. All right, so now on to Han Solo. Andy, tell us about Han.
Han Solo, he is the scoundrel's scoundrel. He is a former Imperial lieutenant. He's now one of the galaxy's elite bounty hunters, and man, he's got a pair of solid brass. And yes, he shot first. Han Solo was originally and masterfully played by Harrison Ford. For this one, I wanted to find, I think the embodiment of Han Solo is that he cares, but he doesn't want you to know he cares, and he is tough as nails, but at the same time, he has this caution about him because he knows a lot of the times I think he walks on very, very thin ice. So he tries to portray this air of standoffishness, of toughness, but I think, you know, underneath all that, he knows that he can be a hair's breadth away from on the wrong end of a blaster from a bounty hunter who's itching for a reward. And he has a soft spot for causes, but he just doesn't want anyone to know that because it can ruin his reputation. A man's got a reputation. But I thought a guy that I thought could hold that kind of picture and portray it well and maybe add a slightly darker edge to it all was Damian Lewis.
Oh.
I thought he has portrayed himself admirably in several things, most notably Homeland recently.
What else?
You jerk.
Say it. Does it rhyme with Schmand of Schmrothers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was in something about some war that happened back in the 40s. No one really watched it, though, so it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
So I think Damian Lewis, who is a very accomplished and very talented actor, would be awesome at this role.
It's a good one. He's grizzly. I like that. I haven't seen Homeland, but he definitely is not a pretty boy, which
well,
I appreciate.
But he's got a little bit of a rugged handsomeness to him. I think that that kind of comes from his piss off attitude. You know.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's ugly. I just don't think he's smooth, and I don't think Han should have that smoothness. Yeah. Harrison was more on that side, but he was still pretty pretty rugged at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And he was in Band of Brothers.
I need to stop everything here just for a second and call out Andy. He's a smuggler, not a bounty hunter.
Oh, did I say bounty hunter? Damn it.
Did.
Called him a bounty hunter.
Ooh. Can I re-record that?
He might have said that when a bounty hunter was chasing him, but we'll play back the tape.
In the description at the very beginning.
I did say bounty hunter. Han Solo, he is the scoundrel's scoundrel. He's a former Imperial lieutenant. He's now one of the galaxy's elite bounty hunters.
You said bounty hunter.
I should re-record that.
Or you should just turn in your nerd badge.
You know what?
Pull out your chair and just walk away.
Well,
we'll let this one slide. Wars trophy.
I hate all of you.
Yeah.
Well, the feeling's mutual.
So can I re-record that?
Nope.
Damn it!
Just
fine. You know what? I'm going to stick with it. Y'all can.
All right. It's okay. Yeah. Family podcast.
I know.
Family podcast.
I've censored myself.
That's awesome.
Mark, help me, please.
I guess I better. For this entire podcast series, I've been waiting for the right opportunity to cast one of my favorite actors these days. And as soon as I thought of the term scruffy nerf herder, I knew that the time was upon me. So my pick for Han Solo is Brandon Routh.
Nice.
Excellent.
Ooh. I like it a lot. You'll probably know him as Superman in Superman Returns, or perhaps if you're a fan of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, as I am, you know him as the psychic vegan bass player Todd.
That's such a great summary. Yeah.
It's such a great character.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a big handsome man, and I think could wear those weird leather boots that Harrison Ford does. So.
He has proven that he can via Superman. Agreed.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
My only concern with that is going back to the prettiness, grizzliness scale
that we mentioned previously. Smooth.
Yeah, he's pretty. Kinda he's definitely smooth. Pretty.
I think. I think you just need to scruff him up a little bit, and maybe nerf herder him up a little bit.
I think he's got one of those qualities, kind of like Anderson Cooper. You just can't punch the handsome off Anderson Cooper. I think you just can't punch the handsome off Brandon Routh either.
Interesting. We would certainly try, though. We would try to punch it off him.
He is the man of steel, so.
Mm-hmm.
He got a lot of grief. Well, he didn't get a lot of grief. The movie got a lot of grief. Superman Returns, I'm speaking of, because it was... I think Bryan Singer basically sought out to create a total homage to the original movies, and it just went too far in that direction. You know, it was like the pacing was very deliberate. The action was cool, but it wasn't, you know, over the top. And so I think it was like made like a movie from the mid 80s that just happened to be in 2000, whatever. Yeah. I don't remember what year. So, but I thought his performance was really good. Like he balanced, the humanity of Clark Kent with the invincibility of Superman pretty well. But he is, some of it is his voice too. Like, he just has that kind of smoothness to the voice.
Yeah, he does.
I don't know. It's like, I can see him in it. We would definitely have to dirty him up a little bit.
One of the things that, that went a long way in convincing me was a movie called Dylan Dog. I think the subtitle is Dead of Night, but,
that was, I tried to watch that twice. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a pretty decent movie. Brandon Routh is the title character in that one. And the title character is, a human whose job is to kind of mediate between vampires and werewolves and zombies and all sorts of dead of night sort of creatures. And the character is definitely not smooth and pretty.
Yeah. He does an excellent job in it. It just suffers from some pretty poor writing, but I really liked him and I liked the idea of the movie, but no, I can see that character being more swarthy, more Han Solo-y.
Swarthy is a good word for that. Swarthy.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Lee, it's to you.
Thank you. Like you, Mark, there's an actor that I've had in mind that I've been kind of waiting for the perfect moment to cast him because he's one of my favorites currently. I think that, Han Solo, he's very self-confident. He's got a lot of swagger, and that's what I wanted to see. And he's, you know, of course, the rugged handsomeness. So I went with Armie Hammer, most notably. Mm-hmm.
Such a badass name.
Yeah.
Armie.
Most notably of the, he played the Winklevoss twins in The Social Network.
The Winklevi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And currently he's in the new Lone Ranger movie.
Yeah, I fear that his action star cachet is going to tumble pretty quickly based on that. I don't know. It's the lineage is interesting. It's Gore Verbinski, who made one really good Pirates movie and then beat the hell out of two future ones. So I don't know, man. I just don't. It doesn't look terrible, but it doesn't look good. And I think everybody after the trailer was like, "What, Zorro? Like what? What's going on?" I don't know. So we'll see. Yeah, I fear he would be a fading star when we were to make our Star Wars movie. But I really like him. I don't want to. This isn't anything against him. I just think that movie could ultimately not prove to be what he wants it to be for his career.
I think as long as there aren't two follow-ups to this that are just completely overdone. But yeah, that's Armie Hammer. That's my pick.
I think he and Brandon Routh should get into a punching contest to see who can make the other one uglier.
Oh man, that's great. All right, pretty boys, fight it out.
Two pretty boys enter, one pretty boy leaves.
Whoever looks ugliest at the end gets the part.
Exactly.
Man. Yep. cue the scene from Fight Club of Edward Norton beating the bejesus out of Jared Leto and saying, "I wanted to destroy something beautiful."
There you go. Shivers.
Yikes.
But Kyle, I believe you're up next.
Yeah. So I won't say that I went for gristliness first, but that was definitely one of my prerequisites. It couldn't be too pretty. And I wanted somebody that would be good with the blaster. I wanted somebody that I felt could be, have that humanity. That ultimately you don't want to root for Han, but then you do, he's not likable until he is. And then he's really likable, but you kind of don't want to buy in completely. And I decided to go with Andrew Lincoln. He's a British actor, but he is currently known as Rick in The Walking Dead, the main character in The Walking Dead. He has a Southern accent in The Walking Dead, which I would like him to lose, which he does fine. He actually does quite well. But he so much is on his shoulders in that show. And I think he manages it all really well. A bit of it is overwrought. But overall, I just think that he has done a very good job with that role. He's been all over the emotional gamut, from really intense to very sullen to very basic and very simple. And I just think he's done all of it quite well. And I think a lot of that would lend itself to the role of Han. Plus, I think he would just, those blaster scenes, those fighting scenes, he shoots a six shooter really, really well in The Walking Dead. And I think that would lend itself very well to this.
Mm-hmm.
My only concern, and I like the pick, my only concern is Han Solo, or at least the way that Harrison Ford portrayed him, and what I would like to see is that sort of mischievous grin, sort of, hey, it's me, that sort of, like, yeah, there's a little bit of a cockiness and a little bit of an air there, but it's fun almost. And Andrew's character in The Walking Dead, at least, and I haven't seen him in anything else, but I mean, I haven't seen any of that, and there shouldn't be, based on, you know, the character and what he's gone through and what's going on. But so I would like to see that side of things too, that sort of swashbuckliness.
Not that he displayed that, and sorry, Dells, not that he displayed
the
character's characteristics you're looking for, but he had a pretty major role in Love Actually.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, actually. Yep, the wink, everything's going to be okay scene could best be summarized by him standing at the door, bearing his soul to Keira Knightley via Bob Dylan-influenced white cue cards. So go back and see that and say that same thing, Jer. Say it again, I dare you.
Calling you out, Jer, yeah.
I will take your dare, and I will find someone that owns that movie and watch it.
It's a good one. It's fun. It's a good Christmas movie.
Actually, I think I own that movie.
Oh my God, that would be a fun one to remake. Oh my God. I just said, oh my God, twice. Three times.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
All right. So finally, Jer, how about you? Who did you pick for Han?
Well, this stems from a conversation that I had with a very good friend and former coworker of mine, Paul, also a giant Star Wars nerd and part of our Star Wars Trivial Pursuit nights. Back when we worked together, long before this podcast was a twinkle in Kyle's eye, we talked about who, if Star Wars was now, who would play Han Solo? Like that was the question, not who would play everybody, who could play Han Solo. And we talked about it at great length for many hours of time that probably should have been spent working at our jobs, but we kind of, in the course of that discussion, came up with a name that has stuck with me since then, as if anybody could play him, it would be him. And he skews a little old now because this was quite a few years ago, but I still think that he could do it. He could pull off the swashbuckler, the space pirate, the charismatic, simultaneously not likable, likable character that ends up being, you know, one of the heroes, and just be fun. Like, it just would have a great time with the role, and that's Sam Rockwell.
Oh yeah,
man!
Wow.
The only problem with Sam Rockwell is that he can do anything.
Well, that's
he's come up here a lot, Leia. But deservedly so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't argue with it all. I can't argue with that at all, Jer. I think that's right on, especially the mischievous, playful side of it. You know, you look at him in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and obviously it wouldn't be that far, but just the complete, like, all the throwaway lines that he has and all that physicality would be fantastic.
You take a little...
Oddly enough...
go ahead, Mark.
Oddly enough, it's that same role in the Hitchhiker's Guide that kind of convinces me that Sam Rockwell can look tough enough as well.
And if you take equal parts that role, his role in Galaxy Quest, and
that's all I can picture right now.
And you know, nobody's going to get this one, but then his role in, it just left my head.
How many syllables?
Five.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Yes.
That's all I got.
I'll come back to it. Okay. But
seven
you take
it.
No,
five syllables.
That's a good one.
Next
Gentleman Broncos. Holy cow! I got it right. It was five syllables. I pull those three characters together, give them a modified blaster and a Millennium Falcon and a Wookiee, and I would watch that for hours.
That's awesome. I can't believe you got that five syllables. Wow. You should win that one just for that off-the-cuff five-syllable call.
I think you should win it based on the phrase, give him a Wookiee.
And you get a Wookiee, and you get a Wookiee, and you get a
Wookiee. Everybody gets a Wookiee.
It's a door prize. Yeah,
it's the new Oprah plan. Oh, lordy. Well, that's awesome, Jer. Good pick. So for Han Solo, Andy chose Damian Lewis, Mark chose Brandon Routh, Lee chose Armie Hammer, I chose Andrew Lincoln, and Jer chose Sam Rockwell. And the last of our major characters is, of course, Luke Skywalker. Mark, tell us about young Skywalker.
Well, Luke Skywalker is the would-be hero of our story, although when we first meet him, he is a whiny, whiny youth, and he seems a less likely candidate to become a Jedi Knight than to get kicked in the balls and sent to bed without his blue milk. With some luck and some force, though, our young Luke graduates from blue milk to blue lightsaber.
Aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper?
Huh? Oh, the uniform. I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm here to rescue you.
You're who?
I'm here to rescue you. I've got your R2 unit. I'm here with Ben Kenobi.
Ben Kenobi? Where is he?
Come on.
Luke is originally played by Mark Hamill, who I've come to just love as a, at least as a voice actor. In retrospect, I don't know how much I actually like Luke Skywalker, especially in the first film. I don't know how much I grow to like him throughout the series either.
I like him better in the later movies, but I agree with you. I don't really like him in this movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange thought. I mean, he's the guy.
I agree.
I'm the opposite. I get bored with his sort of, his Zen didn't intrigue me as much as his young boyish thing in A New Hope.
I think he peaks in Empire.
Yeah, that's true.
Didn't we all, though?
we did. We really did.
That's true.
anyway, I wanted to get a young actor who would actually be interesting when he gets to, you know, kind of his Zen warrior state, but then wouldn't be as annoying as an annoying young farm boy. So I'm going with Nicholas Holt, who you may remember from X-Men First Class, playing Hank McCoy. If you're reaching back a ways, you may remember him from About a Boy.
Hmm. Yeah.
Where he plays the boy, yep. And he's fantastic.
And most recently in Warm Bodies, if you've seen the trailer
Warm
for
Bodies.
That, oh, which yeah. looks phenomenal. I haven't seen that yet, but I really
want to. It does look
phenomenal.
Yeah, me too. But it's, yeah, and he looks great in it.
Oh, are you talking about the main character from Warm Bodies?
Yeah, the zombie turned human.
Yep. I almost picked him. I couldn't remember his name off the top of my head when you said it. But yeah, I had him on my list for a little while too. Yeah, I like it.
I think he's great. I think he can look either tough or more passive, pretty unassuming sort of fellow. And I think he's got the sort of range that will both range and quiet that will make this work for me.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good choice. I haven't really seen a lot of him of late, but what I have seen, I've enjoyed, and I think I really think that for this, he would do a great job. I would struggle with him for future sequels. I don't think he could be the Luke that Luke becomes as well, but I think he could do this version of Luke really well, so I'm struggling with that a little bit.
I respectfully disagree.
Touche.
Time to arm wrestle.
That'll be a challenge over Skype, but we can make it happen.
Yeah, maybe like emoticons.
Ooh, nice. I like it. I've got a poop one just waiting to fly.
What were you saying about a family podcast?
What? I'll insert the Darth Vader. What?
Oh, Darth Vader, you are a delight.
Hey, Kyle, it's your turn. Start talking about something relevant.
All right, deal. It's totally relevant in that it's the best Luke Skywalker pick ever. It's hard to pick someone for, and I touched on that a little bit with Mark's pick, but it's hard to pick someone for all Star Wars movies because we're not going to have a rotating cast. Although when we remake Empire and Return of the Jedi, we certainly will. But one would assume that you pick a Luke Skywalker for all of the movies. So that's what I tried to do. I wanted to find someone that could do young, that could do boyish, but could also do a little bit wearier, someone who has to make those really hard choices, someone that, you know, ultimately has to bury his father, and, well, I guess burn his father, but you know what I mean. And I went with Emil Hirsch. He was in Speed Racer, and so he's got some of that action credential, which I actually like Speed Racer a lot more than I thought I would. He was fine in it. I didn't think he was spectacular, but I thought he was good. And also Into the Wild would be another reference point for that.
He was fantastic in that.
Yeah, he's a really excellent actor. He was also in Milk, which is one of my favorite movies of the last few years. I think he's really talented, and I think that, you know, Mark Hamill played Luke Skywalker is really whiny to great effect in the original. I would like more of Anakin's lineage in him from the get-go. So when it comes to the time where he has to make that choice from the light side or the dark side of the Force, that it feels more strained. I would like to see a little bit more of that from the get-go. It doesn't mean that he has to be like all bitchy emo teenager from the get-go. Like, he doesn't have to be all sullen, but I think that there could be a balance of those two that would make the decisions and the weight of those decisions later on in the series a bit more believable and a bit more intense, and I think better. So yeah, Emil Hirsch was my pick.
My only, I really like it. My only critique of it is age. They'd have to make him look pretty young, at least in what I envision the Star Wars being, with Luke and Leia being more of that early 20s, late teen, because he's got to be
he's pushing in his 30. 30s he's, now, he's right? 20, yeah. He's 28 almost.
He's 28.
Oh, okay. But he's not as still, he's not as old as I thought.
Or 27. Then,
but,
yeah.
But I agree with that. I think that he needs to be, for this part in the story.
He's a farm boy.
He's got to be younger than that, I believe. So I would agree with you, Jer.
He could shave,
but I do like the pick.
Yeah, that would go a long way.
Movie magic.
But I do like the pick. I like the range that Emil has. Out of the Wild is one of my favorites, and he basically does that entire movie on his own. I mean, it's not a lot of it's not a lot of dialogue. It's not a lot of interacting with other people for any great length of time. It's just about him and his emotion and a lot of how he portrays that outwardly without dialogue. And I think that would do well for the internal conflict that Luke is supposed to have.
Yep, totally. All right, Jer, how about you? Who would you pick for old Luke?
Well, I bounced through a few different people. Like I have said several times, I've been trying to keep things young with both Luke and Leia. And then, of course, I blew that out of the water by picking Sam Rockwell, who's in his late 40s as Han Solo, or mid-40s. But he'd make out with Jennifer Lawrence, I'm sure. Right?
Totally. I mean, I think so.
Twist his arm.
It'd be, yeah.
He is a method actor after all.
That's a good point.
What's my motivation to make out with Jennifer Lawrence?
What isn't your motivation to make? Anyway, so I chose another young actor who's been in some things that I like. I had a couple different people that I pulled out from things that I've seen them in and kind of imagine them in that role of just this kind of not whiny, because I'd like to get away from the whiny, but more sullen, more hasn't quite figured out who he is and where he fits in this crazy mixed up universe. and I went with Logan Lerman, who has been in several different things. Most recently and probably most notably, he was in The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Oh, I just saw that movie. That was great.
He was the main character in that. He was also Percy in The Lightning Thief. I almost said Percy. I almost said Percy Harvin, but that he's a Viking. No, Percy Jackson and The Lightning Thief. He's Percy Jackson. He was also, and this is probably my favorite and what I drew the most inspiration for Luke Skywalker, is he was the son of Christian Bale in 310 to Yuma. Which is a couple years ago. He was a little bit younger. He was probably 14 or 15 at that point, but he was outstanding in that role. It wasn't a big role, but he was pretty pivotal to the plot of that. And so I think that he could play the both the struggling young farm boy who's trying to figure out where he fits in, and is this really going to be his life? Is he going to be a farmer? You know, moisture farmer, whatever a moisture farmer is, or is he going to have some greater pull in the universe? And he's played, you know, in Percy Jackson, he's played sort of the hero coming into his own, and in Perks of Being a Wallflower, he's played sort of that outcast, and has done both of them in to a very high degree. So that's who I ended up with, Logan Lerman.
It's a good one.
Rocking the alliteration too. Can't argue with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I try.
Yeah, I don't know much about him, but it seems like a good choice, especially age-wise. And I think, you know, he's got the action movie credential, which is important. You know, we can handle that. So, yeah.
Also, he also just like you guys and your Obi-Wan Kenobi pick, he also played D'Artagnan in Three Musketeers movie a couple years back.
Really?
Yep. Huh. So check that out. I don't think it was a very good one. I think I saw it, but I don't remember. It wasn't one that I remember thinking it was very good, but yeah, check if you picked anything to watch him and watch Perks of Being a Wallflower and 310 to Yuma, in my opinion.
Okay,
well, I haven't seen either yet, so that sounds good to me.
Is that all of us? No, that's not all of us. Of course not. That's half of us. Lee, who did you pick?
I'm waiting. No, I went with someone who doesn't have an extensive resume yet, but, you know, has done some, has had some minor roles, and from what I've seen of him, you know, can really play this type of character really well. He's got that sort of innocence and naivete that I think Luke has in the first movie here. And I went with Dave Franco, who happens to be James Franco's younger brother. I believe he's in his mid-20s right now, but he looks very young, and I think he could pull this off really well. I think he, most notably, he's been in 21 Jump Street. He was very briefly in Superbad, I think one or two scenes, and I think some episodes of Scrubs when that was on.
Looks like he's also in Warm Bodies, too.
Mm-hmm. I recognize his face. I don't remember much about him. I get like a little bit of like a Sean William Scott vibe from him, just a little bit, which I would not lend itself to Luke necessarily. but I think he does seem to be a good actor.
Yeah, very much so.
He seems a little pretty.
Well, Mark,
I think he could get scruffy.
Mark Hamill was fairly handsome, I think.
we'll just have to get Yeah, Dave Franco in a big car wreck in between the movies.
Yeah, there we go.
Don't tell him. It'll just be like way hidden in the contract.
It's way on the back page.
Wait, man, these other guys just had to get in the punching contest, and he has to get in the car accident.
Yeah, that's bad.
Well, like, we put our Luke through a lot. We just want to make sure that by the time he gets to the "no, that's impossible," that he really feels that, because he's got to.
I want his nose to be sideways.
Put him through a boxing boot camp. It'll be great.
There you go. Andy, what have you got?
I went a little bit off track on this one. It's not nearly an Emma Thompson off track, at least not gender-wise, but it is a little bit cultural-wise. And part of the reason why I did this was the original casting in A New Hope doesn't really reflect, in my opinion, the racial diversity within the galaxy. I think they do a better job in the prequels of making the galaxy truly a lot more alien than they do in the original movies, which is splitting hairs a little bit, I admit. But I think it would be fun to try to incorporate a little bit of diversity into the cast, but I don't want to do that, obviously, to sacrifice acting quality. So the person that I picked, I think, would do a really good job portraying Luke in that young, naive, wide-eyed sense. And I chose Dev Patel. You may know him from Slumdog Millionaire or Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. He would have to tone down the optimism a little bit, maybe. He's known, I think, in some of those bigger roles that he's very – that's kind of what I picked up mostly from watching his performances, that he's this kind of – eternal optimist who, despite the world coming crashing down around him, he never seems to lose hope or faith, and always seems to be a little bit too happy. But I think if that could be reined in a little bit to just this wide-eyed kind of fascination and wonder with, you know, submitting his application to the Academy and going off and seeing the rest of the galaxy and things like that, I think that he would almost be a natural at that part of the role, and I would love to see how he would handle the rest of it.
He has done some, at least one darker piece in The Last Airbender. You know, there he also was, it's a pretty physical role. He, you know, he plays Zuko, who's a disgraced prince and trying to regain his honor. Does a lot of fighting.
Mm-hmm. He's also had some roles in some less optimistic fare. I've never seen them, but I'm just looking at his IMDb page. He was in the series Skins for a while. And he's got a role in the movie About Cherry, which is about a girl who gets kind of sucked into the porn industry. So, you know, he's definitely not limited himself to these wide-eyed wonderment roles, but that's just what I think, that's what I know him the best from. But I would love to see how he would handle this role and what he could do with it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good pick, Andy. I like that a lot, and I like the diversifying of it a bit. That's right on. All right, so for Luke Skywalker, originally played by Mark Hamill, Mark chose Nicholas Holt. I chose Emil Hirsch. Jer chose Logan Lerman, Lee chose Dave Franco, and Andy chose Dev Patel. So that's it for our major characters. Now we have one minor character each, so five minor characters that we're going to go through quickly here. You know, Star Wars has such a rich universe, and you better believe come Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi remakes that we'll be recasting more of those characters then. So it's not as though we're just going to recast these guys each time. We might consider it, maybe. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But for now, we do have some minor characters that we want to talk about. So first is the role of Uncle Owen. Lee, tell us about Owen and who you picked for him.
Sure. Originally played by Phil Brown, Owen Lars is a simple farmer who has no patience for Luke's Tashi Station runs. Although he tries, he just can't persuade Luke to stay away from the academy and remain a simple farmer. For this one, you know, I think Uncle Owen is in two scenes or something like that. But I thought it would be fun to have a really well-known actor who's got a lot of experience and who plays that sort of tired working man, you know, the guy who obviously makes his living with physical labor. And I picked John Voight.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. That's maybe my favorite pick of the night so far. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah. I think he could just play that to a T, almost, well, better than Phil Brown.
Yeah, Owen was kind of a jerk, but he knew, you know, you ended up finding out why. But
yeah,
you know, I think John Voight would do that absolutely perfectly.
Absolutely.
I see the dad from National Treasure.
Yeah. In a good way or a bad way, Jer?
In a good way. You know, that sort of, you're on a fool's errand and this, you know, you're just going to waste your life and blah, blah, blah. Out of love, he's being harsh and dream crushing.
Yes. And I was thinking of his role in Heat as sort of the guy that De Niro goes to for, it's almost like his mentor on the other side of the law helping him out, but he's almost like a father figure in that.
Nice. I dig it.
And I believe Mark has something to say about Aunt Beru.
Indeed I do. Beru Lars is the wife of Owen, and being the wife of a simple farmer does simple farmer's wife things. She is soft-spoken and motherly, and apparently cooks a fine whatever it is that she cooks, or at least no one seems to say otherwise. Aunt Beru was originally played by Shayla Fraser. Shalele Fraser. And...
and sorry, that was great.
It's a pretty forgettable role.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Lars family demise is pretty pivotal to the plot, so you can't begrudge them for not sticking around. I guess that being said, I did want to get an actress who could just bring a little bit more grace and depth into the role. And so I picked Natasha McElhone, who we'll remember as the leading lady from the movies Ronin and The Truman Show.
Mm-hmm. Solaris as well, the Solaris remake.
Solaris, yep. Yeah, a fine Scottish actress, I believe. She's the type of actress that can really do a lot with her eyes.
Yes.
That does help to have prominent eyes, but just kind of got that subtlety that I appreciate.
She looks like a redheaded Meryl Streep.
Ooh. she's good in everything.
You woke Andy up.
Yep. Got Andy's vote. Thank you, Lee.
She's a really excellent actress. I think in Ronin, it seems like half of the special features in Ronin were about how Natasha kept up with all of the male actors in that movie, which it seems a little misogynistic. But when you look at who she was working with, like Robert De Niro, Jean Reno, Sean Bean, I mean, you know, it's like
Stellan all
these real, yeah, Stellan Skarsgård was all these real, you know, heavyweight male actors. So yeah, I think she's great. I think that's a great pick. Between John Voight and her, there is certainly an age difference. We can maybe age her a little bit, but you know, it doesn't have to be a downside either. I think that would be perfectly fine.
So Kyle, I would love to hear about the Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yes, indeed. Not your run-of-the-mill politician. Grand Moff Tarkin makes today's evil politicians look like teddy bears by comparison. Whether he's holding Vader's leash or blowing up planets to set an example, Tarkin lives up to his Grand Moff title, whatever that means. So yeah, essentially you just want him to be the embodiment of evil. This was originally played by Peter Cushing. You know, he's very gaunt and lean and hollow and cold and everything that you would want a bad evil person to be. And it was really hard to think of someone similarly evil today. So I ended up going away from that portrayal a little bit. I mean, he's just so thin, you know, I mean, he's just like, he's just skeletal almost. And you know, I was thinking like, yeah, yeah. And I, you know, I was looking at like the Harry Potter universe to think of a villain from there and see how that would work. And I sort of indirectly went into the Harry Potter universe, but not to a villain. I ended up choosing John Hurt. You know John Hurt from Alien. He has a alien shoot out of his stomach and spaghetti flies everywhere. He's been in many, many movies, but he was the villain in V for Vendetta. I think that was another inspiration as well. I didn't particularly like him in V for Vendetta. He wasn't terrible. They basically told him to chew up evil scenery and he did so. So I think he would need to pull it back a little bit in this from that type of role, but I think he would, he has the presence to manage Vader, to spit dialogue with Leia, and I think I would believe him blowing up a planet. So yeah, just for the hell of it. So yeah, John Hurt is who I went with.
Good one.
Very nice.
Thank you. So we hemmed and hawed about this next one a little bit about would we do it? How would we do it? So we're going to talk about recasting Darth Vader. So Andy, tell us what you decided for that.
We're recasting the voice of Darth Vader, if I understood my assignment correctly.
Correct, yes.
Not going to worry about the physical performance of Darth Vader, which was
David Prowse.
David Prowse, thank you. For the most of it, except some of the fantastic lightsaber scenes. But that's neither here nor there. The voice of Darth Vader was immaculately performed by James Earl Jones, who lent a very highbrow but dark and evil timbre to the voice of Darth Vader, which really made him the villain upon all villains since have been based, in my opinion. You can't be evil without being Darth Vader. So to pick someone to fill those shoes, I felt like I needed someone with nearly, with as big or bigger of a voice, but not someone who was just loud and obnoxious, someone who really needed that almost Shakespearean manner. And really, if you're going for a big booming voice in Shakespearean manner, there's only one person you can go to, and that's Brian Blessed.
He does indeed have a booming voice.
Man, does he ever.
My concern with that is that he was Boss Nass in Episode 1. So would that be too similar? Would he have to change it significantly to... Well, admittedly, you know, Darth Vader doesn't say, "Husa Yusa," so that's a start, mind you.
But. That's a part of it. I don't think it would be too big of a stretch, because I would imagine that his voice as Darth Vader, I mean, the cadence and the phrasing and everything would be just completely separate from the Boss Nass debacle. But I think that also you could put enough effects into his voice to make it sound a little metallic, a little processed through the mask, and a little just detached enough that to make it, I think, more of what Brian Blessed's voice would really sound like, and a little more of a natural conversation for him. So I'm not too concerned that people are going to be like, "Oh, he's already Boss Nass, blah, 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 blah. Shut up. He's Darth Vader now."
That's an appropriate response. we'll call it giving it a chance to overcome that that weakness.
In that defense also, it's not unheard of for the same actor to play multiple roles in a movie. I will refer to the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
So that's a good reference. You.
It's true. Elijah Wood played everyone in that movie.
But man, he was good.
Yeah, it's true. Especially the eagles. He was a very convincing eagle.
So, Jer, tell us about your favorite character from the Star Wars universe.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, even though he had a small amount of screen time, only a handful of lines, he played a very pivotal role, not only in the movie, but in the universe that the movie is based in, and that is Jack Tono Porkins. We might know him better as Red Six, but he was a traitor and pilot from Bestine 4, who, along with the other Bestians, was forced to abandon his homeworld when the Galactic Empire chose it as the state of a new military base. Seeking the opportunity to strike back at the Empire... I'm not going to read this entire wiki page because it's longer than George Washington's. He was a pilot. His computer got messed up, and he got too low, and they shot him, and he died.
And they couldn't name a skinny guy Porkins. They had to call the fat guy Porkins.
They couldn't name Porkins.
I love the fact that they say that he got shot, because they never actually show him getting shot.
They show him blowing up.
Ship blowing up, but yeah.
I just thought he was too fat.
He was also a champion T-16 Skyhopper pilot. Just, I mean, if you guys wanted to know that.
I just assume the cockpits are especially large in T-16s. Is that the... Oh, God, get it over with. Keep going. Keep going. Okay.
Also, William Hootkins, who originally played the character of Porkins, was originally brought onto the Star Wars set because he was the stand-in for the guy that was going to play Jabba.
Oh, awesome.
And then he kind of got fed up and bored and left, and then he finished whatever else he was doing, and they're like, oh, they're still filming that. Hey, we need fat pilots. You should be a fat pilot. And so he came in, and he was Red Six.
Man, I wonder if the character was named like Steve Smith, and they're like, let's call him Porkins.
It'll be funny.
Some like set hand just yelled across the set, hey, Porkins, we need you. And then it's like, oh, that's going to be his name now.
poor Hootkins.
As he's like, I've played Shakespeare. So, Jer, who would you pick for Porkins?
Poor Hootkins. He's a hero, you guys. Just read his wiki page. I chose another broad actor who I thoroughly enjoy whenever I see him in a movie. And generally, it's by surprise because he doesn't often get top billing. Oliver Platt.
Oh, good one.
So... Nice. He is my Hootkins. I mean, my fantastic. Porkins, played by Hootkins. Platkins. Oliver Platkins.
Wow.
So I fantastic. Chose Oliver Porkins. Yep.
Wow. That went exactly as well as I thought it would. Okay, so for the minor characters, for Uncle Owen, Lee chose John Voight. For Aunt Beru, Mark chose Natasha McElhone. For Grand Moff Tarkin, I chose John Hurt. For Darth Vader, the voice, that is, of Darth Vader, Andy chose Brian Blessed. And for the immortal role of Porkins, Jer chose Oliver Platt. So that's it for the first half of our discussion of A New Hope. We will be publishing the second half of this on April 8th, where we will be discussing the plot and filmmaking changes we would make to this movie, which are not a ton, but there's definitely some there, and we each get to nitpick a few things that we have always wished to change, so that'll be exciting. It's interesting, when we look at the downloads, I have some statistics about who downloads what, and not who, but what gets downloaded. The second episodes are not as downloaded as the first ones. And I think the second ones are really good. So for those of you who might be listening to the first one and not the second one, give it a shot. It's really interesting. It's a bit more abstract. It's a bit more open. And I think it goes in really interesting places. Our friend of the show and what I like to call creative consultant to the Math is Hard Network, just because I run ideas by him all the time on IM, Brian Moen, said that he loves the second half. He just thinks that those are just phenomenal. So give Brian's recommendation heed and check those out. So, gentlemen, as always, this is a fantastic time and a real hoot. So I look forward to the second half, and may the Force be with you.
And also with you.